Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for signing up, tuning in. How you doing tonight? It is Friday, the 1st of October, and aren't you glad? Man, I am. I can't wait. I couldn't wait all week for the weekend. The weather got real nice down here. The leaves are starting to turn in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, so we are going to take off this weekend. Go outside and take off our skin and run around in our bones. I'll tell you, after the summer we've had here, I shouldn't be talking about good stuff like that concerning the weather, because so many people in so many parts of the country are really experiencing some horrendous weather. Of course, it has nothing to do with global climate change and everything to do with the fact that dinosaurs walked with Adam and Eve. So forget about it. By the way, this hour of the Mike Malloy Show is sponsored by the friends of Mark Heaney on his 33rd birthday. Mark is a consumer law advocate in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who wisely subscribes to the Malloy podcast. Mark Heaney, 33 years old. Happy birthday, Mark. I'll tell you what, let's just start off. I got an email from Kay Petrini, our education correspondent in San Francisco. And, Mike, she writes, regarding the segment on last night's show during which you discussed McDonald's underhanded attempts to get around the new health care law, I can't help thinking that this is what Americans deserve. I know that sounds provocative, so let me explain. As you know, McDonald's operates franchises all around the world. And in many of those foreign countries, they don't pull this kind of crap. Why is that? I think I know at least part of the answer. Many years ago, a friend of my stepdad's made a decision that changed the course of his life. Jackie was his name, and his buddies were out drinking at a pub in their German village when they saw a police car parked in front of one of the restaurants. Not only was the cruiser unlocked, but the keys were in the ignition. You know it's coming, right? Yep, being drunk, stupid young men, Jackie, fake name, and his friends jumped in, started the car, and took off. They hit the Autobahn and drove to the next major city about 45 kilometers away before they were apprehended. Among the many penalties he faced, Jackie lost his driver's license permanently. So, how does an 18-year-old boy with limited education earn a living in a small German town? Because of his run-in with the law, his options are limited. Well, one day Jackie went down to the recently opened McDonald's and applied for a job. He was hired, and after several years, he moved into management. He is still there today, nearly 20 years later. Tragic story? Yes, in terms of a young man's goal being thwarted by a serious mistake, but in terms of the ability to earn a decent living, not entirely. Because, you see, the McDonald's that employs Jackie is quite different from the one that employs minimum wage slaves here in the United States. McDonald's in Germany is required by German law to pay a living wage to all employees. Further, on the day an employee is hired, the law stipulates that he or she be fully insured and receive 5 weeks of paid vacation per year. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about any of this. There's no hemming and hawing or threatening to drop employee health care plans. In Germany, as in most of Europe, it is understood that McDonald's either abides by these laws or they can take their food and cheap plastic crap right back to the United States. And that is the fundamental difference between the European democracies and us. In Germany, the people demand a government that looks out for the German worker. Even conservative politicians like Chancellor Angela Merkel talk about the German healthcare system as an issue of social justice. Whenever there are threats to scale back essential provisions of the German social safety net, the people take to the streets. To quote one of the American expatriates featured in Michael Moore's film Sicko, quote, "In Europe, the government is afraid of the people. In America, the people are afraid of the government." End quote. As long as that remains the case, as long as Americans are content to abdicate their power to a government that exists to protect and serve corporate America rather than the people, McDonald's, for one, will push the envelope as far as it can because it knows that, unlike in Germany, here, no one will be pushing back. Okay. You can read her her op-ed pieces or her essays, what do you want to call these, her reports, at Kay's Report Card, KAYSReportCard.com, Kay's Report Card. .com. Yeah, the German politicians who write the laws have not been turned into a bunch of handmaidens for the capitalists in Germany. The capitalists in Germany, hey, they got it great, man. They've got it great. The capitalists in Germany, the capitalists in the European Union, hey, they got it great, right? But there are a few unbreakable laws. You don't exploit people. You provide a certain floor plan. That's a good idea. Floor plan of benefits that will not change. If you want to change it, get your ass out of their economy. But not here. Not here. I heard about this late today. About the STD study, the syphilis study in Guatemala in the 40s. Oh, my God. You know, Guatemala has had a very bloody relationship with the United States. We overthrew their democratically elected government, their president, Jacobo Arbenz, in 1954. He was elected by the people to serve the people, and a couple of fruit companies that operated in that country that were based in the United States didn't like it, so we sent in the military, our military, and overthrew him. Well, not quite that overt, Mike. I mean, it was a CIA-inspired operation, but whatever. And since then, backed several hardline governments during a 36-year-long civil war that ended in 1996. And in that 36-year-long civil war, where the United States backed the repressive, dictatorial, militaristic, capitalist counter-revolutionaries, 200,000 Guatemalans were killed. I don't know who said it, Martin Luther King Jr. or Michael Moore. I damn sure have said it. And that is, I'm not trying to compare myself to that. I'm just saying, you've probably said it too. The largest terrorist organization on earth is the CIA. The largest funder of the largest terrorist organization on earth is the government of the United States. I don't care who's in power. Democrat, Republican, booger eater, it doesn't make any difference. So when you start hearing about terrorism, oh yeah, you know, these Al-Qaeda types who blow things up and attack our buildings and kill thousands of people here. Just keep in mind that the United States has been doing this for over a century. And the rest of the world knows it. The only people on earth who don't understand the terroristic aspects of the United States government for the past century plus are American citizens. You want another example in Guatemala? This broke today. We got to take a break here. We'll come back and talk about this. This is shocking. It's very disturbing. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Oh, talk radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. Okay, so we're responsible for 250,000 deaths in Guatemala through the Reagan-Bush 1 years and before. All over Central America, the United States has left a bloody footprint, just gallons, oceans of blood in Central America as a result of corporatist America insisting that the United States Marine go in and kill people so that they can operate without having to deal with unions, without having to deal with peasants' land rights. Smedley Butler, General Smedley Butler, two-time Medal of Honor winner. Just look him up, Smedley Butler. Do a Google on him and read what he wrote, entitled "War is a Racket," because he talks specifically about the murder and mayhem. And this guy was around at the turn of the 20th century. The murder and mayhem we have caused and committed in Central America. Now comes this. American scientists in the 40s deliberately infected prisoners and mental hospital patients in Guatemala with syphilis 60 years ago. Deliberately. There were experiments going on. We had just gotten our hands on penicillin, just been developed. And American scientists, researchers, wanted to find out how effective it was. And by the way, the government researcher who led the work in Guatemala also was involved in the infamous Tuskegee experiment from 1932 to 1972, where scientists tracked 600 black men in Alabama who had syphilis but didn't know it, and they were never offered treatment. I mean, it's bad enough to torture and murder and make sick your own people. But when you decide to go outside your own borders and torture and sick and make sick and murder other people, I mean, Jesus Christ, are there no limits? Huh? Now, I can hear one of you teabag freaks say, "Oh, my God damn it, that was back in the 40s. What do you think we're doing today, you dork? What do you think we're doing today? The U.S. government-funded experiment, which ran from 1946 to 1948, was discovered by a Wellesley College medical historian. And like I said, it was conducted to test whether penicillin could prevent infection from sexually transmitted diseases. Secretary of State Clinton and Secretary of Health and Human Services Sebelius said today, quote, "We are outraged that such reprehensible research could have occurred under the guise of public health," end quote. The Guatemalan embassy in this country said they knew nothing about the experiment until Secretary Clinton called to apologize last night. Ambassador from Guatemala said, quote, "We appreciate this gesture from the USA acknowledging the mistake and apologizing. This must not affect the bilateral relationship," end quote. Now, what happened was in Guatemala, 600, almost 700 men and women were exposed to syphilis, or in some cases gonorrhea, through jail visits by prostitutes. And when that did not infect enough people, they used the sex workers too. In other words, when that didn't infect enough people, they were the victims were deliberately inoculated with syphilis germs, gonorrhea. Is it germ? Yeah, germs. Whatever. That's according to the Wellesley College historian. Those who were infected were offered penicillin, but it was not clear how many were infected and how many were treated successfully, how many were kept as a control group, how many died. And as reported by the Associated Press, this revelation of abuses by the U.S. medical research program is only the latest chapter in the U.S. troubled history with the impoverished Central American nation of Guatemala, which, by the way, has a gross domestic product, about half of that of the rest of Central America and the Caribbean. The stuff that is taught as history to, that was taught to you, was taught to me. Sometimes I get so goddamn angry when I think what was taught to me back in the 50s and 60s, 50s, when I was in school, what was taught as fact, as historical fact of the United States, what was taught as historical fact with the rest of the world. And when I compare that to what I have learned as an adult and what has been revealed, I just get furious. And I think about what was taught to my kids who are now in their early 40s, my kid who is in his early 30s, and now my six-year-old. And I think, what is being taught? Now, Molly, first grade, so far they haven't gotten into history. But I will guarantee, goddamn to you, that I will be watching this public school she goes to like a hawk to see what is being taught as U.S. history. And if it's not correct, if it is not factual, then I'm afraid I'm going to be one of those parents that school administrators don't like. Well, and by the way, last night, apparently, four or five of you emailed me and said I was referring to Gene McCarthy when I meant Joe McCarthy. All right. It was Joe McCarthy who accused the Eisenhower administration of being riddled with communists, and the army being riddled with communists, not Gene McCarthy. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
That's safe in a land that's clean and free for every color and culture, every person, every being. Your creed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around.
Because liberal is a good word. It's More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So last night, was it last, I think it was last night, or the night before, I don't know. I read this letter from this guy who, I assume it's a guy, who wanted to remain anonymous. And he said he'd written me on a couple of occasions using a different email, anonymous, for a couple of reasons. And hold on, wait till the music runs out, and then I can talk. There we go. He was writing to apologize. He was ashamed, apologizing to not to me, but to the people. He works for a small law firm, he said, and when their general and commercial litigation dried up, they end up doing a lot of foreclosure work. And my emailer wrote, in a word, it's disgusting. Since I have to do this to make ends meet, there's little I can do. In doing this, I've worked for banks as they foreclosed on people's homes. I've seen firsthand the abuses the banks engaged in. I have seen the practice of, quote, creating delinquencies, end quote. It just goes on. Remember that? All right. Well, guess what? Guess what? In the paper today and in the news, it turns out, and this is all over the place, it's in Wall Street Journal, it's at Bloomberg, it's on the networks, it's everywhere. Turns out that the foreclosure machinery that has forced millions of Americans out of their homes is beginning to seize up as some of the people who got mortgages and their lawyers are now saying that the lending institutions cut corners badly. I don't mean just cut corners. Committed fraud in order to go through these rapid foreclosure events. Evictions now are expected to slow sharply, housing analysts said, as state and national law enforcement officials shine a light on questionable foreclosure methods revealed by two of the country's biggest home lenders in the last 2 weeks. We're talking about J.P. Morgan Chase and GMAC, both of whom have said until further notice, it's going to stop foreclosures. Now, Old Republic National Title, one of the major title insurance companies, sent a bulletin to agents saying that, quote, until further notice, end quote, it would not ensure title to properties foreclosed upon by GMC Mortgage. And the reason they're not going to offer title insurance to those properties is because at this point, nobody knows if GMAC followed the law. Or if J.P. Morgan Chase, J.P. Morgan Chase has acknowledged the possibility that 56,000 J.P. Morgan Chase mortgages may have been people evicted, thrown out of their houses fraudulently without doing what they were supposed to do. So J.P. Morgan Chase has acknowledged the possibility of missteps and they've suspended all foreclosures in the 23 states where they needed court's approval. The Treasury Department said yesterday it was asking regulators to look into, quote, these troubling developments. What these sons of bitches were doing, these lending. Oh, and by the way, it's not just them. Today, the Bank of America acknowledges in a legal proceeding that an official for Bank of America that she signed up to 8,000 foreclosure documents a month and didn't read them. That is in violation of the law. Her admission adds the nation's largest bank, Bank of America, to a growing list of mortgage companies whose employees sign documents in foreclosure cases without verifying the information in them. That is fraud. That is fraud. The Bank of America executive said in a February deposition in a Massachusetts bankruptcy case that she signed 7,000 to 8,000 foreclosure documents a month and she read them all. Now it turns out it's a lie. Now, you've listened to me past several months talking about predatory capitalism. Oh, by the way, the federal government has been the majority owner of GMAC since you and I provided $17 billion in taxpayer money to prevent GMAC's failure during the financial crisis when it first broke. So we contribute money. GMA turns around and steals our homes. Steals them! God damn it, that's what this is. It's theft. All the people. How many of these stories, these sad, pathetic stories that the filthy news media in this country, they put on the nightly news, they put on the network news. You read a New York Times about a family barely struggling by, and these predatory bankers come in and take their house. And the whole thing was a scam. On the part of the banks, the lending institutions, the rating agencies, everybody, everybody in this filthy capitalist banking system took advantage of these people. It's astonishing. How pissed off am I about this? Way up there. You know, a scale of 1 to 10, probably a 9.5. Because I read these cases. I read these human interest stories, right? Human interest stories. A mom, a dad, a kid or two. Do you know what it's like? I don't. It never happened to me. I grew up in an attic. But do you know what it's like to be a kid in a family and have a house? And all of a sudden your parents come to you and say, listen, we're going to have to go live in the car for a while. Daddy and mommy lost their jobs. Daddy and mommy are losing the house. Daddy and mommy have lost every goddamn thing. And then it turns out that not only was the lending institution lying scum when they made the loan, but they're lying scum when they come back 18 months later and repossess a house. Now, how are you supposed to win? You know, I need to ask people in the American middle class, how much longer are you going to put up with this? How much longer? Bank after bank, lending institution after lending institution. They lied on both ends. They cheated. They stole. How many American families do you suppose? How many kids? How many people now who are living with brothers-in-law or sisters or going back to live with 80-year-old mom and dad because these predatory sons of bitches did this. I said the other night, if the banking industry, if the financial industry, if capitalism can't even handle making mortgages, then how in the hell can it be a system on which we run an entire society? Somebody answer. Guys, see some hands. Anybody want to answer that? You don't have an answer. So here we go again. Here we go again. And why isn't America focused on this, everybody? Well, because we have a Kenyan in the White House, right, who doesn't have a birth certificate. That's why. I have a bunch of middle-aged white people freaks wandering around a national gathering spots carrying signs to say, "Don't tread on me! We want our country back!" From whom? You stupid, misguided right-wingers. Why don't you go after the people who are destroying the country? So today I'm thumbing through the business section of the New York Times. That's where you go now if you want to read some scandals that will make your hair stand on end. Why these stories are now on the front page of New York Times, I have no idea. The Swiss drug giant Novartis is paying $500 million fine to settle criminal and civil investigations into the marketing of the anti-seizure medicine Trileptal and five other drugs. Federal prosecutors accused Novartis of paying illegal kickbacks to healthcare professionals through speaker programs, advisory boards, entertainment, travel, and meals. Novartis joins a growing list of pharmaceutical companies that have settled government investigations into healthcare fraud in the last few years, including Pfizer, which paid $2.3 billion, Eli Lilly, $1.4 billion, Allergan, $600 million, AstraZeneca, $520 million, Bristol-Myers Squibb, $515 million, Forest Laboratories, $313 million. Pharmaceutical companies. So what's this latest about? They come up with a drug. And once the drug goes into the public domain, once the doctors are prescribing it for a condition A, the doctor, if he chooses, can also prescribe it for condition B, off-label prescribing. But Novartis, illegally promoted Trileptal for neuropathic pain and bipolar disease. It had nothing to do with that. The fines, $500 million from this one company. And it does not stop. It does not stop. You wonder why I am anti-capitalist? Here's another reason. So the show's been on for 45 minutes. The banking industry, the pharmaceutical industry, predatory bastards who are ruining the country. What are you going to do about it, American middle class? Huh? What are you going to do about it?
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Man, welcome back. 10 before the hour. To anyone who's listening on our affiliates who are having trouble hearing it, I have no idea what's going on. We are transmitting this program the way it should be transmitted. It is going to the people, the satellite run by Dial Global. They are transmitting it the way it should be transmitted. Now, if you are listening on XM or Sirius or any one of our affiliate radio stations and you are not getting the program, I don't know what it is. It's probably something inside the affiliated radio station or XM or Sirius. I have no idea. Everything is okay here. It's just not once it gets to the station, I guess. I don't know. Let's hope it works out. Novartis settles off-label marketing case for six drugs for $422.5 million, almost $500 million. Now, back to that story. In a statement, Novartis said it had been cooperating with the investigations since 2005 and had already corrected its promotional practices. And here's the statement from Andy Weiss, president of Novartis Pharmaceuticals. Statement, quote, "We are pleased to have reached resolution on this matter." He added, quote, "The company will continue its commitment to high standards of ethical business conduct and regulatory compliance in the sale and marketing of our products," end quote. Harry Gordon, assistant professor at the University of Michigan School of Business, who follows the drug industry, said it was, quote, "easy to stifle a chuckle," end quote, when the company announced a guilty plea and the same news release promised a continuing ethical conduct. But see, this is what capitalist corporate America does. They don't give a damn. They couldn't care less. They get caught, $500 million fine, chump change. Okay, we won't do it again, but we're not doing anything. So that makes our mea culpa kind of stupid. Prosecutors said top management at Novartis, top management. Now, see, no people went to prison over this. The company, the corporation was fined. Prosecutors said top management at Novartis had approved illegal marketing from July 2000 to June 2004. No individual, however, was named or charged. Ruth Faden, professor at the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins and executive director of its Berman Institute of Bioethics, said off-label marketing undermined the government's work to ensure the safety of drugs. Your life and mine and anyone who takes any kind of a drug for anything is at risk. She said, when drugs are in the market, they can be used for any indication at the discretion of the physician. But that's different from a situation in which companies make aggressive efforts to persuade physicians that there's value in a drug for which there is no evidence, end quote. The five other drugs involved in this civil settlement with Novartis for $500 million are Diovan, a hypertension drug that is the company's top-selling product at $6 billion last year. Sandostatin, a drug to treat a growth hormone disorder that had worldwide sales of $1.2 billion last year. Xforge, a hypertension drug that sold $671 million. Tectuma, a blood pressure medicine that sold $290 million. And Zelnom, a medicine for irritable bowel syndrome and constipation that was later completely withdrawn from the United States market. Frank Lichtenberg, a Columbia professor who receives pharmaceutical financing for research on innovation in the industry, said off-label prescribing was encouraged by the AMA and paid for by insurers, but off-label marketing was clearly illegal. Lichtenberg said, quote, "So it's not surprising they would settle because they don't have a legal leg to stand on," end quote. Just never stops. Never stop. The Principal Financial Group. You've seen their commercials, right? Got that little triangle down in the corner of the ad. Principal Financial Group. They announced yesterday that it's going to stop selling insurance. It's going to stop altogether. They have approximately 840,000 people who receive their insurance through an employer that Principal Financial Group handles. And they said, we've had enough. Same reason the McDonald's, Wall Street Journal reported that McDonald's was getting, they're going to drop insurance coverage. Same reason that the major insurance companies said we're not going to sell any more standalone children's policies, because now all of a sudden these filthy predator insurance companies have got to take kids with pre-existing conditions. So now the Principal Financial Group, huh? Do you have money invested with them? Well, guess what? They've decided to get out of the insurance business. After taking premiums, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars in premiums, are they going to refund all the premiums? Hell no. What are they going to do? They're just getting out of the business. If you have insurance, it's handled through the Principal Financial Group. Here's your bendover stamps. Oh, no, they don't even give those anymore, do they? Johnson & Johnson, another capitalist corporate predator. A top official at the FDA told lawmakers yesterday that quality control failures at Johnson & Johnson unit involved in the recalls of popular medications like children's liquid Tylenol were not isolated to one plant, as Johnson & Johnson first said, but were far more widespread. You shouldn't be giving your kids any of this patent medicine crap anyway. None of it. None of it. Children's Tylenol, my ass. Give them children's rat poison. It would probably work as well. More on Johnson & Johnson when we come back. I am very pissed, if you hadn't guessed. I mean, just story after story after story of how the consumer, the working person, the middle class is just being hosed, beaten into a pulp by the pharmaceutical industrial complex, the health insurance industrial complex, on and on, the banking industrial complex. Every time you turn around. Oh, no, 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 wait, I take it all back. The collapse of the housing market, oh, that's right, that was the fault of Acorn.
Let's face it.
Talking about Novartis, and it's a major ripoff of the American consumer, a drug company, another one. And the fact that it got fined $500 million almost, it doesn't mean anything. Michael in Roswell writes, regarding that fine that Novartis is going to pay, it's ironic and moronic that the fines doled out in this case and the others will be paid in part by the federal government. Because of the laws passed requiring Medicare to buy their drugs at full price. So Novartis and others will simply raise prices to cover the cost of the fines. Funny how that works, huh? Yeah, remember that? Especially the Medicare prescription drug plan where written into, everybody went, you know, George Bush says, oh, well, yeah, I got the seniors a nice prescription drug plan. It's unfunded. It's all going to be paid for somehow. I don't know. But the really neat part for the pharmaceutical companies was that there would be no negotiating the price. There would be none of that. They would pay full market value. They being you and me. Don't you get sick of this? Huh? Seriously, don't you get sick of this? Don't you get tired of just having it stuffed into your gut and broken off at the hilt? Back to Johnson & Johnson. You remember the so-called quality control failures of a whole spectrum of Johnson & Johnson products. Remember, you take the caps off and the stuff that smelled musty or moldy or dirty or filthy or like it had rat droppings in it or whatever it was. And Johnson & Johnson, it turns out, they had, rather than issue a recall when it first started, they hired a bunch of people to go out and buy all of it up, buy it off the shelves, right? you filthy bastards, including kids' drugs. Why would a responsible parent, don't send me emails and say it's the only thing that works. Why would a responsible parent give their kid any of this poison? Why? Now, let me say, when Molly was little, yeah, we did. We did that. We did. Oh, my God. God help me. We had children's Tylenol. We had several patent medicines, as they used to be called. OTC, what they're called now, over the counter. Until we finally realized a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, stop giving our kid this crap. So we stopped. Something odd, Molly hasn't been sick since. Has she been sick, Kathy? Not at all. Oh, she had pink eye. That's right. She had pink eye. What did we do? We put some antibiotic salve up in the corner of her eye? Drops. She's had, 2 days before her birthday, she had a fever, kept spiking up. And, you know, I was so tempted because I did so, my other kids, go get the children's aspirin or Tylenol or whatever, quick. No, don't. And we didn't. We took her to her pediatrician. Pediatrician checked, no strep infection, no ear infection. Let it be. Thank God we have a pediatrician who does not. I mean, Molly's pediatrician has said many times, don't give your kid that garbage. Has she not? So, Johnson & Johnson, putting children's medicine out on the, it's not really medicine, symptomatic crap out on the market, knowing that they shouldn't be doing it. And then lying and saying it was all came from one plant. So New York Times reports at a congressional hearing, Dr. Joshua Sharstein, the FDA's principal deputy commissioner, contradicted Johnson & Johnson executives' assertions that the kinds of lapses causing the recall were limited to a site in Fort Washington, PA, that has since been shut down. Dr. Sharfstein said the FDA, quote, has found inspectional deficiencies of varying degrees of seriousness at all these facilities under the umbrella of McNeil Consumer Healthcare, the unit of Johnson & Johnson that manufactures these products. The company, Dr. Sharfstein said, had an inadequate quality system. Inadequate quality system, huh? I wonder if they gave this garbage filth to their kids. What do you think? At all these sites, Dr. Sharfstein said, there was, quote, the failure to investigate and correct product problems in a prompt and thorough manner, end quote. It just doesn't stop. Johnson & Johnson. Oh, my God. Johnson & Johnson. I mean, it might as well be mom and apple pie. They don't care. Why should they care? This is the way the capitalist system, this is the way the corporatist system works. Manufacture garbage, put it out on the market, let the market determine whether or not your sales will go up or down. Well, how does the market determine that? Well, if you put out a risky product and enough people die, then people just won't buy the product. It's astonishing. And these right-wing bastards all over media and these teabag candidates, they all say the same thing, don't they? You got to stop this intrusive government regulation. Let the marketplace decide. Right? Oh, my God.
I wonder what you're supposed to do if the marketplace decides it's okay to have, you know, poisonous medicine entering your children's bodies, and then the market also decides that it's okay for the insurance companies not to insure these children because of a pre-existing condition, and the marketplace decides that we're going to privatize the ambulances out there so we can't get them to the hospitals, which have also been privatized and wouldn't take their insurance anyway because they don't have insurance.
Okay. okay.
That's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem, right? But just keep in mind that the teabaggers want more of this. The Republicans want more of this. They want more irresponsibility on the part of the corporations. They want more, or I should say less, government. What do they call it? Government intrusion! All caused by that Kenyan in the White House. Oh, listen, by the way, we're going to have two trivia events tonight. One coming up here at the bottom of this hour, and then one coming up at the bottom of the third hour, where you can call in and win yourself a free one-year subscription to Molloy Podcast Downloads if you get the right answer. All right? Okay, we have... We have a break coming up here in a few minutes. Coming back, Prairie 2. He sent me one last night and he sent me one tonight. And I think the one from last night, which I never got around to, is the one I want to share with you. Okay? Okay. I hate this. You know, I start getting emails from people. People I rely on, not from right-wingers who would like to, you know, muddy the waters, but people listen to this program on a regular basis and say, your sound is messed up, this is not coming through, that's not coming through. And we check our little dials and gauges here, and everything is exactly the way it should be. So that means there's a screw-up somewhere else. And that just drives me crazy. It makes me start screaming. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. From Prairie 2, the teabaggers haven't heard that there's a new landlord. Prairie 2 writes, Bruce writes, the House voted 348-79. Wow. On Wednesday, to require the Department of Commerce to calculate countervailing duties on imports from China and other countries, they just mean China, that manipulate their currency to the detriment of the United States. It's about time. China wasn't happy to hear anybody from one of their client states talking back and promised there would be repercussions if the measure was passed. They needn't have worried themselves. The Senate will not engage in such pre-election posturing as the House members who need to fool the peasants every 2 years. Chris Dodd came right out and said that the Senate won't be voting on the measure. Dodd isn't running for re-election. Time to retire and cash in as a lobbyist for the big banks. Just the same, little Timmy Geithner ran right out and made all sorts of declarative statements to reassure China that we know who's the boss, saying, quote, it's important to recognize that we're not going to have a trade war, we're not going to have a currency war. And to placate the peasants in the U.S., he boldly lied by saying, I would say that a substantial fraction of the Chinese leadership understands it very important to them economically to let this exchange rate move, end quote. And then he went on saying that China realizes that to have access to global markets, it must play by the rules. Oh, China made it clear that it has its own view of what the rules are, and China's view is the only one that matters. And China can back up their threats. It's not just that they could dump $1 trillion worth of U.S. debt on the market and make our treasury bonds worthless. We are a big enough country that we can just print money. In fact, that's what we've been doing for a couple of years now. The problem is that China, if China stops taking our money, we are done. You see, the real threat is that they can shut off our economy like it was on a switch. We don't make anything anymore and can't live without China's exports and without China's rare earth metals. We can't make anything ourselves. With 97% of the world's supply of these metals, China can throw the switch on anybody in the world anytime they want to. So we can't look to anybody else for help either. Japan found this out the hard way, and it took less than a week before they started seeing things China's way. The teabaggers can make all the noise they want about taking back their country. The Republicans and the corporate Democrats have sold it to China, and China intends to keep it. If the teabaggers think they are suffering under the socialist Kenyan fascist that they think has taken their country from them, they're in for a rude awakening as the People's Republic of China begins to assert its dominance over its tenants. Pray2.com. Did you, the reference he's making here about Japan found out the hard way? The Japanese arrested a Chinese ship's captain who was sailing in what Japan calls its territorial waters, took him to Japan. The Chinese captain was going to put him on trial. And China, all of a sudden, you could hear this rumble coming from the west of Japan. And it was China saying, essentially, let him go or we will just smash you. You think the atom bombs dropped on you by the United States 60 years ago were bad? We will smash you so bad you'll never recover. It's your choice. And then to back it up, China decided not to provide these so-called rare earth metals, of which they own 97% of the world's source of the stuff, to Japan, so Japan would not be able to make all that electronic crap that they still make, right? So what did Japan do? They said, what part of your ass, oh great China, should we kiss? And then they did that. They released the captain, dropped the charges, the captain went home, and China was still pissed. China says, you forgot the apology. What? The apology. Where's the apology? Well, at that point, it looked like the Japanese government was going to fail, another one, because the current prime minister was saying things like, well, what? We are not going to apologize? What are you talking? Until finally Japan made it, or China made it very clear. 5, 4, 3, okay, we apologize. Or, by some reports, China dropped that demand. So that's what Pray 2 is referring to when he says that Japan learned the hard way that you don't mess with China anymore. Now, I happen to disagree with everybody on this, I guess. Maybe not Pray 2. I don't know. I think we ought to put a tariff, a punitive tariff, on every single thing that China imports into this country, which would be just about everything that we use in this country. Put a tariff on everything. Trade war? Let there be a trade war. We've always had tariffs. It was Bill Clinton, George Herbert Walker Bush, and the twerp that succeeded Clinton who made all this insanity happen. Oh, Reagan got the ball rolling. Trade war? So, let there be a trade war. Maybe the capitalists who have destroyed this country will realize, whoops, maybe we better go home and start making things in the USA again and letting American workers, oh, there's those goddamn unions. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Let's think about it for a while. We'll be right back. the theme music. It's time once again, ladies and gentlemen, for podcast trivia. If the phones work! Here on the Malloy program, just get the right answer to the question, if the phones work. And if you get the right answer to the question, if the phones work, you'll win a one-year subscription to Malloy program podcast downloads, free, no commercials, no cost, no nothing. Are we ready? Ready to try it with this new phone system? Huh? Should I go ahead and push a button? Jesus, I'm afraid to push one. Here we go. Bobby? In Decatur, Alabama, Bobby? Okay. So it's not working, right? Let me put Bobby back on hold. All right. I'll tell you what. I think what we're going to do here is just we're going to get rid of all the phone calls. We're not even going to try this. We will wait until we have phone calls that are working, phone system that is working. All right? All right. Now, I guess, regarding McDonald's dropping the insurance for their workers, I got this email from he put his name on here, but I just don't want to give his name. He says, you know, with McDonald's getting out of the insuring their employees, it means one of two things. One, that McDonald's is telling its millions of crew that instead of relying on that one job that gave insurance to its people that they either need to get a second job that will give them insurance or take a voluntary pay cut. Oh, wait, did I say crew? I meant crew and managers, too. I've been managing at a McDonald's for 5.5 years. And that's the only insurance I have. Perhaps the red flags should have gone up when I received something that resembled an insurance card more than a year after signing up. $30 out of my paycheck for this crap. And by the way, I'm one of those hourly grunts, not salaried. $9.35 an hour doesn't go as far as it used to. McDonald's cares more about its bottom line. Number two, McDonald's cares more about its bottom line than it does the people who work for it. So all of those studies and surveys that say that McDonald's is a great place to work for mothers and teenagers and is a great place for young people to get their first work experience is a complete and total lie. You know what one of the companies that made money during the Bush era was? McDonald's. They call it recession-proof. They aren't hurting for money. But obviously they can't or won't throw its people a bone and provide them with some health insurance because, well, what if they may need it because they also can't afford to eat anyplace else? But McDonald's. I can feel confident saying all this openly and freely because I know that no one I work with or for is listening to this radio show because apparently liberal Uniontown, Louisville, Kentucky can't handle the too extreme Mike Malloy radio program. And then he puts his name down here and how he's listening. Well, thanks, unnamed emailer. I don't want to mention his name because I, you know, seriously don't want to see something horrible happen to somebody because they express their opinion. Ohio Republican congressional candidate Tom Ganley, this is according to the Huffington Post, is the target of a new lawsuit alleging that this multi-millionaire businessman sexually assaulted a Cleveland woman in his office last year, according to the Cleveland Plain Dealer newspaper. The claims come from a 39-year-old married mother of four who says she met Mr. Ganley at a Tea Party rally in July of last year where she asked if she could get involved in the campaign. After a series of meetings revolving around campaign duties and a potential car repair, Ganley allegedly sexually assaulted the woman. The Plain Dealer reports, quote, Ganley told her he wanted her to dominate him. He told her he wanted to dominate her, parade her on a leash, and have sex with her in front of his play friends, the suit says. The suit accuses him of grabbing her from behind, wrapping his arms around her, kissing her, and despite her resistance, reaching into her pants. Ganley, the Republican millionaire, businessman, congressional candidate, Ganley told her then Or I should say, Ganley and the woman have been seeking to settle out of court, but after no agreement could be reached, the accuser, the woman, turned to a lawsuit. Steve Deaver, Ganley's attorney, has called the charges extortion and claims they are politically motivated. Obama put her up to this. From a Congressional Quarterly report of the ad. What ad? Here's a quote. Millionaire used car salesman Tom Ganley is trying to ride his reputation to Congress. He should be trying to hide it, an editor says of the new Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee ad. Sued by customers for fraudulent and deceptive practices, two F's from the Better Business Bureau, over 160 complaints in just 3 years, Tom Ganley will try to sell you on his reputation, but with this used car salesman, it's buyer beware. Now, that has nothing to do, you see, with his the lawsuit charging him with essentially sexual assault. I don't understand. What's the difference between sexual assault and rape? Well, I guess there was no get the kids away from the radio. 3, 2, 1. No penetration, huh? He just assaulted her. Mr. Ganley's auto dealerships, Congressional Quarterly also reports, are currently facing lawsuits for racial, gender, and age discrimination. Ganley faces incumbent Democrat Betty Sutton in 13th Congressional District race in November, and he is a teabagger. So what do you want to bet that he's going to get just thousands of votes because, hell yeah, we want our country back? Is there one single teabag candidate who is not either a lawbreaker, a liar, a cheat, a thief, a quitter, a sneak? Just one. The answer? No. Every single one of these sons of bitches, every single one of them, is a fraud, a liar. Look at this Paladino. Oh, my God. Paladino. Oh, Jesus. How about Paladino, huh? How about this guy? Well, you know, we've said before, politics hates a vacuum, abhors a vacuum, or nature abhors a vacuum. And politics does, too. When there's no leadership, you get this kind of garbage that rises up out of the muck. You get the garbage, the absolute garbage of the from the political class in this country. In this case, it's the Republican Party that apparently has been murdered. The corpse is laying in some alley someplace in I don't know where, Knoxville, Tennessee, or somewhere in Oregon. The Republican Party corpse is laying there. And standing over the corpse is this vampiric figure with red eyes, and you can't tell if it's a male or a female, but it has red eyes, and it has dagger-like teeth, and there's blood dripping from its mouth, and on the back of its cape it says, "I'm a teabagger." Now, don't misunderstand. I think that is a just and proper demise to the Republican Party. The problem is we have enough stupid people, monumentally stupid people in this country, they're going to vote for these freaks. They're going to vote for them. And why? Because, well, they're white. They're white! And, we gotta take our country back. And, we gotta stop Social Security and, public libraries and cops and, ambulance people and fire departments and postal service and garbage pickup and road repair and bridge repair. You got to stop it. We want our country back. Well, you know my position. Give it to them. Give it to them and then hunker down Hunker down. I heard Obama's impassioned speech to the college students. You know, once again, yeah, I'm sitting there going, yeah, yeah, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Let these right-wing cockroaches have it. And for 2 years, they will so reveal themselves to be the corporatist fascists that they are, that I think, I hope, is it worth a roll of the dice to find out that the American public will rise up 2 years from now and throw every one of these sons of bitches to the curb and reelect Obama for another 4 years. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but it sure as hell beats whatever they're going to come up with. So that's my opinion. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I don't need security. I've got a Colt 45 in here with me. I'll scare off intruders in my fatigues, black jacket, and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me. I don't see things their way.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Well, maybe. 10 before the hour, we are having so many technical difficulties in here tonight. excuse me, that this next hour is going to be, we're just going to play a rebroadcast from last night's program for the third hour tonight till we get some of the stuff worked out. Ray in Turner, Oregon. Writes in about something I said the other night of it just pounding the daylights out of some of the of what I said was after Woodstock Nation, if the hippies could have looked into the future and seen what these conservative devils have done and what they were planning to do. All 600,000 people at Woodstock probably would have just started marching across the country and grabbing every Republican, every right-winger, every incipient neo-Nazi who was about their age at the time. You know, we're talking, 40 years ago. 40? Yeah, 40 years ago, 41 years ago. And just beat the living hell out of them. I mean, seriously, do to the right wingers what Paladino is talking about doing.
Wow.
What Paladino is trying to do to the reporter from the New York Daily News. So I made that comment, and this is what Ray writes. Mike, you're not the only one who wants to beat the daylights out of some of these right wingers. There's a real push in Oregon for these teabagging Republicans to take over our state government. The Supreme Court Citizens United case, allowing unrestricted campaign donations by corporations and the ruling class, has unleashed a flood of insanity in our state, in Oregon. Their puppet candidates are being promoted like never before. They're not content with a single billboard. No, they need mile after mile after mile of campaign propaganda. I thought I'd seen it all until yesterday when I saw a pickup camper truck covered wall to wall with every dirty message against Obama and the Democrats, Muslim, communist, socialist, anti-God, blah, blah, blah. Every inch of this pickup camper was covered with their rotten lies, parked in a supermarket lot. The Republicans are moving billboards parked in major shopping centers depicting Obama as a lazy Mexican dressed in a sombrero, demanding illegal aliens be allowed to overflow the borders. I can only hope it all backfires in their faces. I understand your reasoning in letting these jerks take it all, this election, but I'm not so sure that's such a hot idea. Once they gain full control over our government this time, election fraud won't be the exception. It will be the rule from here out. The Citizens United ruling may very well be the end of America. Sincerely, Ray in Turner, Oregon. I don't know. I've said it before. I just wonder for how long and how much more the American public will put up with. Apparently, there is an endless open pit of tolerance in this country for these right-wing vermin. And I'm sure you have too, I've reached my limit. There's no way I could even carry on a civil conversation with these SOBs. Not that they would be interested in a civil conversation, but it's just gotten to that point where the only thing out of their mouths, the only thing you hear from these people is lies, deceit, deception. It's enough, you know? It's enough. Ah, man. All right, once again, just so you know, this next hour of the program, we're going to have to, in order to try to correct some of the problems that we're having in here, we've always had problems on this program. You know, we use essentially the same hookups as, say, Stephanie Miller or Bill Press. And I don't think they ever have these problems. I don't know what's going on. Probably we're being sabotaged. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. Nah, teabaggers are too stupid to do that. They wouldn't know how to do it. But I don't want to continue to irritate people with poor quality of the program. So we're going to replay the third hour from last night while we try to figure out what the hell is going on in here. The latest from the world of wanton attacks on people who are perceived to be gay. This time it's an 11-year-old kid named Tyler Wilson. He's a sixth grader in Findlay, Ohio. And he likes to do cheers. He expected to get teased by some of his classmates once they found out he had joined a cheer squad over the summer. But he didn't expect a broken shoulder and bruises. Tyler's mother is angry after a couple of kids beat up her 11-year-old son. She says they allegedly beat him up because he's a cheerleader. Tyler Wilson joined a cheerleading team in a league separate from his school. He's the only boy on the team, but some of his classmates play football for that same league. And the 11-year-old said, quote, "They were saying I was a sissy cheerleader and called me a queer and stuff like that," end quote. Two youths allegedly beat him up. His mother said one youth was suspended for starting the fight on school grounds. The other suspected youth was not suspended because the broken shoulder didn't happen on the school's property. Huh? Tyler's mother called Findlay police, and prosecutors have charged the two boys who allegedly beat up Tyler. An 11-year-old beaten up by other 11-year-olds, I guess, who called him a queer because he was going to... because he was on a cheerleading squad. All right, stick around. Another hour coming up. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. A couple of days ago, I got the strangest email from someone who insists on being anonymous, made it very clear. I assume it's a he. And I've been thinking about reading it on the air. I got it about, today's, what is the date, the 29th? It has been, well, this evening, this is the 29th, it's been the 29th all day today, right? I got this on the 20th, and I've been holding on to it, so I'm going to share it with you now. Subject line says, "Yes, I'm ashamed." Dear Mike, first let me say that I've written to you on a couple of occasions, but I'm using a different email to be anonymous for a couple of reasons. While I am anxious to get this information out, I'm not anxious to be public myself yet. In addition, I'm ashamed of what you're about to read. I'm frankly scared of your ire at this because this email is against every bone in my body. It offends every bit of morality I have in me. I expect, if there is a purgatory, to spend extra time there based upon what I've done. I expect a huge repair job on my karma after I get out of this. Here goes. I work in a small law firm. I went to work for a small practice a couple of years ago. The person I work for had his practice undergo a large shift, a large change in the area of practice. The general and commercial litigation dried up, and this person ended up doing a lot of foreclosure work. In a word, it's disgusting. Since I have to do this to make ends meet, to support myself and my family, I have little I can do. In doing this, I have worked for banks as they foreclosed on people's homes. I have seen firsthand the abuses that banks engage in. I have seen firsthand the practice of, quote, creating delinquencies, end quote, by refusing borrowers' payments, returning them, causing the accounts to go past due, and then foreclosing. By the time the lawsuit gets to me, the damage is done. In addition to foreclosures, I have seen these banks, the same banks that received hundreds of billions of funds from TARP, from tax dollars that comes from the money middle-class persons have sent to the government in the form of hard-earned tax dollars, only to have these scum-sucking, putrid banks do this. Hypocrisy is not a strong enough word to describe what they do. Theft is not strong enough to describe it. The only thing I can come up with to describe it, to give people a taste of what's really going on, to make people cringe like they should, to feel the queasy gizzard they should feel, is to call it financial genocide. Because that is exactly what these banks are doing. They are intentionally killing the middle class. The class of people that you mentioned, vis-a-vis Nader, out of which comes revolt, movements, and revolutions. I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to get up and leave, to turn my back on these vultures. But I'm just not in the situation to do that. So the only thing I can do is to pull the information together, to point out what is public information, but what people may not know. So I'm including it in this email. I have added links to press releases from the Attorney General of New York, from the office of the Attorney General of New York. It names these gutter law firms who are deceiving courts, trying to lying to judges and defrauding regular people. I want people to know that it is these same purveyors of financial genocide who are hiring these gutter-ass law firms to go after the same people whose taxpayers have bailed their effing GD asses out. It is with this information that I hope people can begin to fight back. These so-called firms should be shut down, put out of business. These so-called lawyers should have to pay back every dime they've stolen from consumers with their fraudulent, disgusting actions. Finally, all I can say is, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I now do some of this stuff. I'm sorry that I'm part of the problem. All I can say is this. Please know that I hate it. Please know that I go days without sleep over what I do. All I can do is beg people to accept my apology. Thanks, Anonymous. And then the writer lists five links to websites. One is a couple of them are New York government websites. Three of them are. One is New York Times. And another one is an information website about how to stop debt collectors. And I will probably post this at our website, but I found the email interesting. And you know the weirdest part? I have a suspicion who wrote this. I really do. I'm not going to speculate on the air, but I have an idea. I really do. Who wrote this? And if he, and it is a he, if he's listening, you know, I'm not going to make a moral judgment on your position as to what you are doing regarding being a part of this this machine that is grinding people up. That's, you know, you make comments about your karma, or you indicate a fear of purgatory. If you really were Catholic, you would know that I think the church declared purgatory null and void. So I think you were using it as a figure of speech. But, you know, the moral dilemma that you might find yourself in, that is, I'm not going to make any judgment on that at all. I can't, because I would have to put into balance, or anyone who judges you on this would have to put into balance what you feel your obligations to take care of your family and yourself, and your obligations to continue to work for, do contract work for law firms that you know are breaking, if not the letter of the law, certainly the intent, the spirit of the law. It's a difficult choice, and I mean, what can I say? I'm no philosopher. I'm not going to say I hope you choose wisely, although I hope you choose wisely. What has happened to so many people? This is a story I think is yet to be told. The suffering. A couple of newspapers have made some efforts in putting the stories out, individual stories of families who have slipped into foreclosure, really through no fault of their own. I realize the right wing has tried to paint this as a bunch of Acorn-sponsored black families who, through their tremendous power, disrupted the entire global financial service. You know, this is what right-wingers do. It's just amazing that low-income families, read black families, were able to derail the entire financial service services, when in fact it is the putrefaction of capitalism that's doing this and continues to do it. I mean, these crises continue to go on. I heard something on the news the other day here in Atlanta. Once again, there are banking organizations, financial service organizations, that are starting to finance homes with no money down again. They don't give a goddamn. They couldn't care less. Capitalist, especially capitalism where it concerns money manipulation, they don't care. Whatever they need to do to make as much profit, blood money, out of people who are only trying to live their lives, they will do. So, Anonymous, I hope you, and only you can, I hope you solve your moral dilemma. I really do. It is one. I know it's a moral dilemma for you, but I think the bigger question is how much longer do Americans allow a predatory economic and now political system to continue when it's clear where it's taking us? That's the question I have.
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
We were young together. We were on the
21 past the hour. Hey, what happened to all those color-coded terror threats? Remember, they were so popular back in the early years of the Bush crime family. Whatever happened to those? With Ashcroft, Ashcroft would come on the television from Moscow or someplace and talk about, well, you know, we've discovered another one, this one in Miami. Whatever happened? Anytime I'm going through an airport, I will hear periodic announcements that Department of Homeland Security wishes to remind you that the condition of the terror threat condition is orange. Of course, they've been saying that for 10 years, so I have no idea what the hell they're talking about. But whatever happened to that? Do you remember that? Do you remember the candy-colored tangerine flake baby, whatever the hell it was, that it was like a roll of Lifesavers? Remember that?
Yeah, with a great big hole in the middle in the security. It used to be down there on the screen all the time on television.
Oh, no. Well,
on,
that was
on,
Fox.
On the cable. No, well, it was all of them for
really?
A while, and then Fox kept it up through the entirety, I think, of the Bush administration. It was just sort of like, be afraid,
well,
we're coming.
Domestic terrorism now, apparently, according to Newt Gingrich, is not necessarily from only from the sneaking Muslims who are furtively moving from bridge support to building doorway to roadbed to the sneaking bomb throwing guy who has 8 tons of fissile material strapped to his body. The real threat to America, to our way of life, the Muslim. According to Newt, it's not just that guy who wants to blow everything up. No. There's another threat. Gene Robinson wrote about it a couple of days ago in his column in the Washington Post. According to Newt, American judges are trying to impose harsh Islamic law in their courtrooms, and we have to beware. You know, the lashings and the stonings and the beheadings. Did you know that? Did you know that it's coming to a courtroom near you? According to Newt Gingrich, a plot is afoot so that if you don't pay your parking tickets and they issue a warrant and you have to go to court, normally you might have to pay the tickets and pay a $200 fine, not any longer. Now you have to pay the parking tickets, and then they will, according to Newt, if we don't stop this, then you'll be sentenced to X number of lashes in the public square. Huh? You didn't know that? Remember back during the so-called Values Voter Summit, this collection of Christian psychopaths who get together every year, and Newt was one of the featured speakers. He issued this thunderous call for action against an imminent threat that, as Gene Robinson points out, exists only in his fevered imagination. Newt Gingrich has an imagination that is not fevered. It is riddled with disease. His imagination, I've never had the experience of watching a guy from the beginning to the end of his political career. I first met Newt when he ran for the Georgia General Assembly 30 years ago, whenever it was. I watched as Sean Hannity attached himself to Newt like a lamprey when Newt's political comet took off. I've seen the guy go from a economics professor at the University of West Georgia, or at the time it was called West Georgia College, to the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, to a basket case, a guy whose grip on reality is sliding slowly out of his hands. It's incredible. I've never seen during the time when he went into his wife's hospital room immediately after she had cancer surgery and informed her that he He was not interested in the alimony payments or whatever that the court had ordered him. I don't remember the exact details because I was so taken by the fact that Newt Gingrich would walk into his soon-to-be ex-wife's hospital room immediately subsequent to cancer surgery and start bitching at her about, well, I don't like to pay this. Newt Gingrich is slime. Oh, that's wrong. That gives slime a bad name. Newt Gingrich is just, I don't know. He is the result of some crazy conjurer up in the mountains of North Georgia, one of those snake-handling freaks who said, I think I'll create a demon and loose it on America. Amen! And out popped Newt Gingrich. Some more of this when we come back, because Newt has an idea about how to stop courts in this country, all the way down to the municipal level, all the way up to the Supreme Court. Every single court is under threat that it may impose Sharia law, Islamic law. And Newt has a solution. Yes, Newt always has a solution.
They eat the bread of sorrow.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. So Newt Gingrich has discovered a horrific threat to the American way of life. And that is that American judges are getting ready, from your local municipal court judge who decides whether or not you really owe that water bill, all the way up to the Supreme Court. They are getting ready to impose strict, harsh Sharia, Islamic law, lashings, stonings, beheadings. Thanks to Eugene Robinson at the Washington Post for letting us know about this. His speech before the crazy Christian so-called Values Voter Summit a couple of weeks ago. That's when this all came out. It's coming. Newt says that we should have a federal law that says Sharia law cannot be recognized by or practiced by any court in the United States. He wants a federal law. Now, what gang of political crazy people are the ones that are always talking about, well, you know, federal government pass all these laws. Yeah, right. Newt says we have to halt the insidious encroachment of Sharia law, and we have to halt it here and now. Not only did he talk a couple of weeks ago before the Values Voter Summit, but he also, back in July, talked before the American Enterprise Institute. And when he gave a speech there, he went on at great length about the supposed Sharia menace, which he sees as part of stealth campaign to impose Islam on all of us. Sick bastard. Newt Gingrich, this guy, like I said, you know, watching him go from college professor to psychopath has been, in a way, amusing. In another way, there have been a couple of times when Newt Gingrich, when he was at the pinnacle of political power, of course, he always blows it, so to speak. He has no sense of the bigger picture. Everything is about Newt. I remember when Newt declared, more or less openly, that he was here to lead Western civilization back from the brink of utter destruction. But that damn Bill Clinton in the White House was standing in the way. So while Newt was boinking an intern on the Agriculture Committee, subcommittee in the House, he said he was going to go after Bill Clinton, who was boinking, well, you remember. Newt knows does not have the word hypocrisy in his dictionary, nor does he have the word or the phrase "I am crazier than a loon" in his dictionary. Anyway, he said before the American Enterprise Institute, quote, "stealth jihadis." Ooh. Oh, I mean, just those two words together. Stealth jihadis. Mom! Stealth jihadis, he said, use political, cultural, societal, religious, intellectual tools. Violent jihadis use violence. Oh, really? End quote. But he went on to say, but in fact, they're both engaged in jihad. And they're both seeking to impose the same end state, which is to replace Western civilization with a radical imposition of Sharia. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Now, if you have not been in a cave for the past 25 or 30 years, you know that the religious group that is really trying to impose its strictures on American society and the globe, it's been trying on the globe for the past 1,500 years, but the one really trying to take over our legal system is fundamentalist Christianity, not Islam. The Christians are the ones who continually talk about destroying the classroom, all that science and math hog snot, and replacing it with biblical teaching, the Christian Bible. They'll allow the Jews in a little bit, but only insofar as the prophecies of the Messiah are included, you see, because the New Testament fulfills that prophecy if you happen to believe this garbage. But anyway, the cult that is trying to destroy everything American is not Islam. It is not Judaism. It's not even the crazy people in the Mormon religion. It is fundamentalist Christians, both Catholic and Protestant. You know it. I know it. Newt Gingrich knows it. But this is his, the red herring, the dog that didn't bark, the bloody shirt. Call it what you want. This is also, Newt thinks, his way back into political power. Stealth jihadis use political, cultural, societal, religious, intellectual tools. Blah! In the July speech in front of the American Enterprise Institute, Gingrich painted liberals, American liberals, as a bunch of fellow travelers to the jihadis, the stealth jihadis who want to impose Sharia law in our court system. The liberals, fellow travelers. Now, you have to be over the age of, 55 or 60 to understand what the term fellow traveler means. Well, okay, you can be young and have read in your college textbook what it meant. But for those of us who remember how that term was thrown about, even though the memories are dim and kind of sepia-toned because it was so long ago, and I had to remember my mother standing at the ironing board saying to me, well, you know, this Eugene McCarthy guy is crazy. What, Mama? What? Gingrich painted liberals as a bunch of fellow travelers. Gingrich said in the American Enterprise Institute speech, quote, how we don't have some kind of movement in this country on the left that understands that Sharia is a direct mortal threat to virtually every value that the left has is really one of the more interesting historical questions, end quote. Really? That's an interesting historical question? Gee, Newt, you are just so goddamn intelligent. You're just so beyond me. I have a hard time even understanding your sentences. Really? Oh, I'll be darned. As Gene Robinson writes, where to begin to answer this freak? Well, he didn't say freak. I say freak. Robinson says there is no left-to-center movement dedicated to fighting the steady, stealthy insinuation of Sharia into America's legal system because no such thing is happening. Oh, my God. Gingrich invents an enemy and then demands to know why others haven't sallied forth to slay it. This guy is really insane. But then all Republicans are at this point. I think when Republican political theory was created, a poison pill was inserted where at some point in the evolution or devolution of this sick, degenerate political philosophy, the poison pill would dissolve and its poison would flood the Republican Party and all of its members, both elected and the geeks that walk around and say, yeah, I'm going to vote Republican. Yeah, I really like that Paladino guy in New York. Yeah, I really like Sharon Engel. I love all these people. I like the, O'Donnell over there in New Hampshire. God, I like them all. They're real Americans. That's what that little blue pill did. Poing! It's finally exploded. And Newt Gingrich is one of the first casualties. Of course, Newt Gingrich has one of the biggest mouths on the right. I have to admit, he makes the other right wingers sound stupider than they really are. Because Newt can. He was a college professor, you know. He can put together coherent sentences. He can, when pressed, speak in paragraphs even. How we don't have, he said, some kind of movement in this country on the left that understands that Sharia is a direct mortal threat to virtually every value that the left has is really one of the more interesting historical questions, end quote. Really? You know, I don't know why there's not a movement on the left that understands that a yet-to-be-discovered bacterium that exists somewhere in the deepest trenches of the Pacific, if loosed upon American culture, will eat through all the books in the libraries. Why hasn't somebody on the left brought that up? Huh? Gingrich is insane. He is insane. Of course, his purpose is really political. He doesn't give a tinker's damn about any of this stuff. It's just that Newt has become a little asterisk, a little footnote of history. He never did get to the presidency. When he had the third most powerful job in U.S. government, he dropped back 10 yards and punted. And Newt is a failure. He's a class A. He is a classic definition of a complete monumental failure. So he's trying to come back. If Muslim bashing gets a rise out of people, and it does, then he's going to go that way. Watch out! They're coming! The Sharias are coming! Oh, my God! I got the feeling there's something right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. In my ongoing assault against religious hypocrisy, if that's not redundant, I would be remiss in not bringing up Pastor, or Bishop, I should say. Yeah, he's a bishop. Bishop Eddie Long, who has one of the best scams going. He I mean, just a complete scam artist. He has 25 or 30,000 members of his New Birth Church here in Metro Atlanta. This is a guy that's being investigated because, you know, all the money that people contribute that go to the various ministries go to Eddie's Bentleys and Rolls Royces and the boys that he strikes up relationships with and then seduces. And this is a man who is an ardent homophobe, as is so often the case, isn't it? I mean, my God, not too long ago, old Bishop Eddie led a march here in Atlanta demanding that marriage be sanctified as being only between a man and a woman. And in the meantime, he was performing his own commitment ceremonies with a bunch of young men, not together, but individually. One of the young men who have filed a lawsuit against him, according to the Associated Press, the lawsuit is Eddie coerced him into a sexual relationship, told a TV interviewer, the young man did, that he loved the pastor and considered him a father figure. But he also called him a predator and a monster. His name is Jamal Paris, and he was interviewed by Channel 5 in Atlanta, WAGA. Jamal Paris said, I loved him. I'm always going to have love for the things he taught us, but how he left us hurt worse than anything I ever felt in my life. The man turned his back on us when he had no more need for us. That's not a father. That's a predator. Jamal Paris described some of what happened. Here's what he said to Channel 5 here in Atlanta. Quote, I cannot get the sound of his voice out of my head. And I cannot forget the smell of his cologne. And I cannot forget the way he made me cry many nights when I drove in his cars on the way home. I'm not able to take enough showers to wipe the smell of him off my body. End quote. Woo! When a reporter for Channel 5 here in Atlanta first reached Jamal Paris outside a convenience store in Colorado, the young man at first was reluctant to speak, and then he told WAGA that Long exploited the young man's dreams for a father figure in exchange for sexual favors. And during services at his, quote, church, end quote, last Sunday, Bishop Eddie turned to biblical terms to portray himself as an underdog. Yea, and behold, this is warfare. They are attacking me. Oh, my God. I feel like David against Goliath, but I got five rocks, and I haven't thrown one yet. That's what he said last Sunday. In the interview with Channel 5, Jamal Paris said Bishop Eddie, quote, manipulated us from childhood under the guise of providing a fatherly influence. Jamal was referring to himself and the other accusers, Maurice Robinson, Anthony Flagg, and Spencer Legrand. They're in their 20s now, but were 17 and 18 when they had sexual relationships with Long, according to the lawsuit. Jamal Paris said, this is our father and we loved him. Jamal went on to say, that man, referring to Bishop Eddie, cannot look me in the eye now and tell me we did not live this pain that he's denying. And then he addressed a comment directly to Long. He said, you are not a man. You are a monster. It's pretty astonishing. In the black church, homosexuality is acknowledged as something that is there, but in not just the black church, but also in black culture, something that does exist, but we don't talk about it. See, we just don't talk about it. People who do that are on the down low. You know, be quiet. Don't say anything about it because we have this image we have to maintain of manly, testosterone-loaded, aggressive. You know, that's how white people have painted us for the past 350 years. So we have the image. But homosexuality in in the black community is the same as it is in any community. I mean, nobody has an exclusive franchise on heterosexuality. They just don't. People are people. The problem arises when you get some predatory, sick individual, like in this instance, Bishop Eddie, who uses his position, uses his power, uses his rhetorical devices to convince people. I don't care whether it's a Catholic priest molesting little boys and girls or this freak who goes after young men under the guise of wanting to protect them when all he wants to do is sleep with them. Well, sleep is a euphemism. Have sex with them. Rather than just declaring himself and saying, yeah, I am what I am. It sounds like what some Popeye would say. I am what I am. And if you don't like it, that's your problem. But to do this once again, a screaming, drooling, dribbling homophobe, someone who would condemn other people to a hideous life of shame, while at the same time, he takes his pleasure where he can get it. That to me is disgusting. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.